Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for September 2014. This is issue number 356, and I'm your host, Fred Volbe. The address for the DX Audio Service is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805. Email address for general inquiries is fvobe, that's F-V-O-B-B-E, at realoldiesradio.com. All subscriptions and business go to sales@nrcdxas.org. My telephone number for short calls is area code 419-228-6223. If you can't get through, please send me an email or a card or a letter, your telephone number that you're calling from, so I can make sure it does get through. That number is not for musings or reports to the DX Audio Service. The musings number and report number is 419-741-0205. A yearly subscription to the DX Audio Service for U.S. Canadian members is $30. To subscribe or renew, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned. Or you can log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and sign up using PayPal. If you're on the internet, you can sign up to EDXN and get your DX Audio Service in MP3 format. A subscription to EDXN is only $15. Just point your browser to www.e-dxn.com and subscribe online with PayPal. But subscribe only if you're able to download and navigate a website without anyone else's assistance. Before we jump into the AM switch, let's hear from Chris Gay about some get-together information.
As no one has stepped forward to host a convention, we won't be having an NRC convention this year. Proposals for hosting a 2015 convention should go to Ernie Weselowski at neernieew@yahoo.com as soon as possible. In the meantime, NRC members are welcome at this year's IRCA convention to be held in Billings, Montana, on September 19 through 20. The convention will be held at the Lexington Inn and Suites by Vantage, located at 3040 King Avenue West. IRCA, NRC, and WTFDA members are eligible for the $35 members registration fee by check to John C. Johnson, 2922 South Olivewood, Olivewood, Mesa, Arizona, 85212-2923, or by PayPal, add $1, using the address john@johninmontana.com. Hotel rooms are $95 per night plus taxes and fees. Call 406-294-9090 or 877-488-4649 and mention IRCA. Rooms available for a limited time. Questions? Contact John Johnson at john@johninmontana.com.
Now here's Dave Alpert with a look at the AM switch.
Welcome to the AM switch for September 2014. And if you're keeping track, this is AM switch volume 81, issue number 29, updated August 11, 2014. And it starts off with call changes. 870 WSVZ Shelbyville, Illinois. Silent station has applied for a call change to WTIM. 900 WUAM, Watervliet, New York, changes to WABY. 930 WBCK, Battle Creek, Michigan, changes their long-standing call to WTOU. 970 KFTA, Rupert, Idaho, is now KZNO. 1170 KJOC, Davenport, Iowa, becomes a Bob station with KBOB. 1250 WKDL, Warrenton, Virginia, now WRCW. 1350 KWMO, Washington, Missouri, changes to KRAP interesting call sign. 1450 WWNT Dothan, Alabama becomes WDYG. And 1600 KLGA Algona, Iowa is now KLGZ. Taking a look at our new station watch. First, some news on the 640 kilohertz CP, formerly at Terre Haute, Indiana, which, as DX Audio Service readers know, was recently granted a move to Piatone, Illinois, south of Chicago. The Piatone construction permit expired on July 29th and would have required the licensee to take its co-owned WMFN 640 Zeeland, Michigan, off the air. With the September 29th deadline approaching, the licensee filed a CP application for WMFN to move it to Piatone with the same U4 4,500-watt day, 1,200-watt facilities as in the new station CP, which it would surrender. The final result, if granted, would be no different from what is contained in that CP, a station operating at Piatone and no more station in Zeeland. So why the application? It's a clever move to try to get around the hard 3-year deadline for building a new station construction permit, as you can't apply for a replacement new station CP until the next auction window, whenever that'll be, while CPs to modify existing stations can be requested at any time. We'll see if the FCC buys the approach. CP built, moving toward licensing, 890 KDPP, Olivehurst, California. This new station CP granted program test authority and is on with U4, 10 kilowatts day, 480 watts night. Change to outstanding construction permit granted for 1240 KEWE, Kahului, Hawaii. They've been granted a modified CP with U1, 5,000 watts day and night, diplexed with KAOI 1110. Their CP had originally been granted as U1, 5,000 watts day, 210 watts at night on 1250. Full applications for new stations filed under winning auction. The new station on 1130 in Ravenna, Nebraska has filed an application specifying U7, 11,000 watts day, 600 watts night, and critical hours power of 6 kilowatts. The 1490 application in Bozeman, Montana specifies U1, 1 kilowatt day, 900 watts night. The 1500 application in Culver City, California specifies U4, 1000 watts day, 2000 watts night from 5 towers due west of Los Angeles. One tower used to be used by KEIB 1150. The other 4 will be new. Amendment to pending application. The 1540 application in Enterprise, Nevada is for U4, 30,000 watts day, 400 watts night. They've now amended the application to U4, 10,000 watts day, 270 watts night, and critical hours power of 3,700 watts. And it'll be diplexed with KNIH 970. These construction permits are expired and deleted. 1120 WBUR, Coral Springs, Florida. The 1210 CP in Osceola, Indiana. 1230 KRAM, Beaver, Utah. The 1330 CP in Prescott Valley, Arizona. And the long-standing CP for 1370 KPWL, Newport, Washington, is finally deleted from the FCC database. Applications for new stations dismissed. The 1590 application for Spring Valley, Nevada, for a new station with U2, 6,500 watts day and 250 watts night, has been dismissed by the FCC. Same with the application for 1590 in Cheyenne, Wyoming, for a new station with U4, 1 kilowatt day and night. Stations going dark, 1260 WTJH, East Point, Georgia. The license was canceled on July 25th. Station's been silent since 2009, except for a brief unauthorized operation from a non-licensed site without an SDA. 1450 WATZ, Alpena, Michigan, turned in their license, and it was canceled on July 7th at the licensee's request. Construction permits for existing stations. CPs to change facilities of existing stations already on the air. 920 KIHM, Reno, Nevada's CP for U2, 4,800 watts day and 850 watts night from a new site is on the air. 1170 WGMP, Montgomery, Alabama's CP for U4, 10 kilowatts day, 4 watts at night is on. 1490 KWOK, Aberdeen, Washington, CP for U1, 1,000 watts day, 760 watts night from a new site is on the air. And 1580 KNIM, Maryville, Missouri's CP for U1, 480 watts day and 10 watts night from a new site is on. Here's a change to an outstanding CP that's been granted, 1580 KGAL, Lebanon, Oregon. Had a CP for U4, 7,500 watts day and 1,000 watts night. They've been granted a modification to U2, 5,000 watts day and 1,000 watts night. Now some new applications for construction permits granted. 970 KNWZ, Coachella, California. Granted a CP for U4, 5 kilowatts day, 430 watts night. 1280 WMXB Tuscaloosa, Alabama, granted a CP for U1, 5 kilowatts day and 35 watts night. 1450 KQTE Hellendale, California, has their CP granted for U1, 1,000 watts day and night. 1490 KWOK Aberdeen, Washington, also has a CP for U1, 1,000 watts day and night. And finally, 1570 KVTK Vermilion, South Dakota, is granted a CP for U1, 500 watts day, 53 watts night from a new transmitter site. New applications for construction permits filed. 710 WAQI, Miami, Florida, applies for U4, 50 kilowatts day and 6,300 watts night, diplexing with the towers of WQBA 1140. 980 KMBZ, Kansas City, Missouri, applies for U2, 9,000 watts day and 5,000 watts night, moving to the KCCV 760 towers. 1080 WHOO, Kissimmee, Florida, applies for U7, 50,000 watts day, 1,000 watts night, and critical hours power of 25,000 watts. Plus, they're changing their city of license to Winter Park, Florida. This change was authorized through Auction 84. 1090 KQNM, Milan, New Mexico, applies for D1, 900 watts on 1080 kilohertz, moving to Sandia Pueblo, New Mexico. Sandia Pueblo is a Native American reservation about 20 miles north of Albuquerque. Milan is about 70 miles west of Albuquerque along I-40. 1260 WGVM Greenville, Mississippi applies for U1, 1,000 watts day and 32 watts night from their existing transmitter site. 1260 KLGO Elgin, Texas applies for U1, 1 kilowatt day, 200 watts night, moving the night site only to the KTAE 1490 tower. 1300 WRCR Spring Valley, New York files a full-time application for U1, 10,000 watts day and 1,000 at night on 1700, changing the city of license to Ramapo, New York, after winning Auction 84. 1560 WPAD, Paducah, Kentucky, applies for U1, 1,000 watts day and 35 at night, using only one of their existing four towers. 1590 WALG, Albany, Georgia, applies for U1, 2,500 watts day and 45 watts night from a new tower at their existing site. And 1660 KWOD, Kansas City, Missouri, applies to move to the KCNW 1380 tower, staying U1 10,000 watts day and 1,000 watts at night. Here are the construction permits expired, dismissed, and unbuilt. 1430 WRDN, Durand, Wisconsin. The CP for a new site has expired and been deleted. 1320 KSDT, Hemet, California. Their application for U4, 550 watts day and 950 at night with a city of license to Redlands, California, is dismissed by the FCC. Special Temporary Authority 600 KSJB, Jamestown, North Carolina, applies for an STA with U1, 1,250 watts day and 500 watts night from the adjacent KSJZ-FM tower, while the AM towers are rebuilt. 600 KTBB Tyler, Texas, granted an STA for U1, 1,350 watts day, 625 watts night due to tree-damaged coax to the towers. 620 WZON Bangor, Maine is granted an STA with U2 5,000 watts day and 500 watts night due to an underground cable failure. 1010 KIHU Tooele, Utah has been granted an STA for pattern at variance. 1110 WOMN Franklinton, Louisiana granted an STA with D1 145 watts from their construction permit site, so the silent station doesn't lose its license. WOMN will then switch to 1100 when finished. 1150 KEIB Los Angeles, California granted an STA with U2 12,500 watts day, 44,000 watts night, operating non-directional occasionally during the day to allow for tower painting. 1220 WSRQ Sarasota, Florida is granted an STA with D1 150 watts from a temporary site. 1280 WBIG Aurora, Illinois granted an STA for parameters at variance. 1280 WADO New York, New York granted an STA with U1 12,500 watts day, 1,800 watts night during replacement of a tower. 1340 WYCK Plains, Pennsylvania granted an STA with U1 480 watts day and night while the tower radials are repaired. 1390 WZHF Arlington, Virginia granted an STA with U1 250 watts day, 37 at night from the WJFK 1580 tower site where it has a CP. They lost their site on July 28th. 1410 WDOE Dunkirk, New York is granted an STA with U1 1000 watts day and 31 watts night. 1450 WTOD Hartsville, South Carolina was granted, then dismissed an STA with U1 10 watts day and night from a temporary long wire antenna. 1500 WPJX Zion, Illinois was granted an STA with U1 65 watts day and 2 watts night due to weather damage to towers. 1560 WPAD Paducah, Kentucky granted an STA with U3 1 kilowatt day and night using special hours pattern. This is due to pattern problems. 1600 KAHZ Pomona, California granted an STA with U1 5,000 watts day, 322 watts night due to transmission line failure. Okay, now it's time for our monthly trip to the morgue with our silent stations list. Stations informing the FCC they are silent include 930 WTOU Battle Creek, Michigan. They've been silent since July 3rd. So the new owners can renovate their tower site. 1090 KQNM, Milan, New Mexico. Silent since July 7th due to weather damage to their transmitter. 1200 WEMM, Huntington, West Virginia's transmitter failed on July 7th. 1240 KNSN, San Diego, California has been silent since July 25th as the new owners want to make major repairs. 1250 KYKM Rupert, West Virginia has been silent since July 12th as their transmitter failed and needs to be replaced. 1340 KCRN San Angelo, Texas is silent. They went off June 28th due to weather damage. 1400 WJWF Columbus, Mississippi has been off since July 8th and needs a new transmitter. 1440 WDXQ Cochrane, Georgia fell silent April 15th. Their equipment was damaged in a lightning strike. 1560 WLYG Center, Alabama went silent July 4th when the transmitter was destroyed in a lightning storm. And 1600 WRJE Dover, Delaware has been silent since January 14th of this year since the tower owner didn't pay the electric bill and the landlord took down the STA temporary tower. Here's a list of formerly silent stations informing the FCC they are no longer silent. 960 WGRO Lake City, Florida, back on the air as of June 27th. 1040 KURS San Diego, California has been on a while but is now removed finally from the FCC silent list. 1110 WOMN Franklinton, Louisiana was silent since July 29th last year, but is now back on the air with an STA. 1130 WALQ Carville, Alabama, silent since July 19th, 2013, returned to the air. July 17th of this year. 1190 KPHN, Kansas City, Missouri, was silent since July 31st, 2013. Now back on the air as of July 25th with Catholic programs. 1410 WZBR, Dedham, Massachusetts, had reported to the FCC they went silent on May 13th, but in fact they never did. They just operated with a 25-watt STA. 1450 WTOD, Hartsville, South Carolina, has been silent since July 15th of last year and returned to the air a year later with an STA. 1480 WTKD Mobile, Alabama, silent since August 19th, 2013, came back on July 8th. 1490 WDUR Durham, North Carolina, silent since August 2nd, 2013, is now back on as of July 9th. 1540 WLKR Norwalk, Ohio, returned to the air on May 1st. It appears the FCC database is just now getting caught up. Silent stations briefly on the air, then silent again. Why, yes, we have one. 850 WKGE, Johnstown, Pennsylvania, has been silent since October 1st, 2013. Came back on the air July 18th using 30 watts while the main transmitter is being tested, but now it's silent again as of July 21st. Up in O Canada, 1540 CBGA1. Grand Anne's, New Brunswick, granted a construction permit to move to 101.7 FM at Matapédia, Quebec. When this station goes to FM, the AM will cease to exist. 600 CBLV, Bancroft, Ontario, applies to move to 99.3 MHz. 1150 CKOC, Hamilton, Ontario, applies for a CP with U4 50 kilowatts day and 20,000 watts night because they're having problems with their night pattern and they want to simplify it. The new station on 1280 in Toronto, Ontario, at community-based Ryerson University, would like the call letters CJRU with 100 watts day and night. 1340 CBEU, Tamagami, Ontario, applies to move to 106.1 FM. And finally, the 1350 application for Brampton, Ontario, for a new station with U1, 450 watts day and 55 at night, will have a news, talk, and ethnic format. In Canada, they have to specify the format of the station and get permission for the format. That's it for me. I'll see you next month. Remember, if you hear anything or want to report a silent station or one that's just back on the air, either send the information to Fred or call the Musings line. Now here's Mark Durenberger with a band scan.
Well done, Dave, and greetings, everyone. Several months ago, our DX Audio Service listener, Mike Terry from England, was kind enough to call the Musings line, and while on the horn, he asked us to spend some time talking about the Border Blasters, those behemoth, high-power Mexican stations that came up during the 1930s with signals concentrated on the U.S. market. So, Mike, here's more than you ever wanted to know. And we bring you the story by editing together several features on the subject by National Public Radio. Learn and enjoy, and we'll come back in about 20 minutes.
For half of the 20th century, beginning in the early 30s, radio in the United States faced some of its fiercest competition from high-powered stations operating just south of the border. Known as border blasters or X stations, they offered a refuge for renegade broadcasters looking to evade regulation and sometimes the cops. Capitalizing on Mexico's willingness to look the other way, some of the strangest characters ever to grace the airwaves drew millions of fans from the American heartland and around the world. They also changed the shape of American broadcasting. On the media's own, Jamie York first told this story in November 2007.
Turn your radio on, turn your radio on, and listen to the music in the air.
If you were lucky enough to own a new wireless radio receiver in 1923 in small town Milford, Kansas, there was only one local broadcaster speaking directly to you.
Get in touch with God,
get in touch with God, turn your radio on, turn your radio on.
Dr. John Brinkley, graduate of the Eclectic Medical School in Chicago, had recently opened a clinic downtown, and he'd also started one of the first radio stations in the Midwest. Brinkley wasn't only a broadcasting pioneer, he was enjoying runaway success with a medical procedure he'd invented.
One of the first patients, he had no sexual vigor left. He was flat as a tire.
Bill Crawford is co-author of a history titled Border Radio.
Dr. Brinkley, looking out his window with this patient in his office, kind of jokingly saw a Toggenburg goat and joked with his patient, "Boy, if you had some of them glands in you, you wouldn't have this problem at all." And according to Dr. Brinkley, the patient said, "Put them in me, doc. Put them in me. I need those goat glands."
Brinkley installed the goat gonads in his patient, and 9 months later, his wife gave birth to a boy. They named him Billy. The goat gland procedure was a sensation. Desperate patients arrived on Brinkley's doorstep daily to pay $750 for their piece of the goat. Among them was Los Angeles Times publisher and early radio broadcaster Harry Chandler. He inspired Brinkley to launch his own radio station, to entertain his patients, and to create more of them.
You're again listening to the voice of Dr. J.R. Brinkley out of the Brinkley Hospitals, and you know you're sick. You know your prostate's infected and diseased. And you know that unless some relief comes to you, that you're going to be in the undertaker's parlor on the old cold slab being embalmed for a funeral.
He invited listeners to write in with their maladies, which he diagnosed on the air, recommending patent medicines in stock at Midwestern pharmacies, with whom he split the profits. That is, until the American Medical Association convinced the fledgling Federal Radio Commission to yank his broadcasting license.
And about that time, Brinkley received a letter from the Chamber of Commerce in Del Rio, Texas, inviting him to come down and build a radio station across the river from Del Rio in Old Mexico, in a town at that time which was called Villa Acuña, a very, very tiny border-crossing town.
Mexico was chafing against broadcast rules negotiated by the United States and Canada in the late 1920s that seized most of the valuable spectrum for themselves. Mexico saw in Brinkley an opportunity to stick it to their greedy neighbors.
There is a saying, the border radio stations are the stick most useful to beat Washington.
Dr. Jose Ortiz is professor of communications at Pan American University in Mexico City. He says Brinkley's timing was impeccable. Mexico embraced the broadcasting outlaw with open arms.
And Mexican government said, okay, to have the same station that had been closed down because of what you were doing in Kansas, do it here. You will have no problems with us.
Brinkley's station was licensed at 500,000 watts, 10 times more powerful than the most powerful station licensed in the United States. But it was built to blast at twice that. Brinkley Station and its message that you're only as old as your glands could be jacked up to 1,000,000 watts of radiated power. Locals saw it electrocute birds in mid-flight. Electric lights would turn on by themselves. It could be picked up on barbed wire fences and bed springs. The physics of AM radio ensured that border radio had no borders.
From coast to coast, border to border, wherever you are, wherever you may be, when you think of real fine entertainment, think of XERL.
When you crank up these transmitters to super high powers at night, the signals actually go up and they bounce off the ionosphere. So you can see that they would cover the globe. They're doing this and hitting points all over the earth.
You're listening to XERF via Acuña, Coahuila in the Republic of Mexico, your clear channel station that covers every state in the nation.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? The subject for discussion at this time is your health. Not my health, but the health of my listeners and friends throughout Radio Land.
Oh, his voice was lovely. To describe him, he had a deep voice, and it would just wound you. It was so beautiful, and he'd have these people thinking, there is a second chance, you know, for me to be vigorous, alert, and alive, and all that stuff. It was crazy.
Dr. and Mrs. Brinkley of the Brinkley Hospital, I've been talking to you for many years over the radio, and we've been giving you good advice. We've been having lots of men and women as patients, and Dr. Brinkley, in person, at this very moment, as I face this microphone, invites you, ladies and gentlemen, to pay a visit before the cold undertaking slab where funeral procession, the last ride, the grieving loved ones, and 6 feet of earth are your portion prematurely.
My mother would say, oh, turn it off. That is ridiculous. But Daddy and I would listen to anything.
Now, if you have any trouble that had its origin in a sluggish system, I want you to try Crazy Water Crystals with the definite positive understanding that they must help you or your money will be refunded. You know, we get a lot of unsolicited letters from people...
Brinkley's weekly mail count exceeded 25,000 letters, and Del Rio developed plans for a new post office. In 1940, President Roosevelt's fireside chats focused on fascism, while Brinkley lectured on kidney and rectal ailments. Folks all over the nation heard Brinkley's broadcast, whether they wanted to or not. XERA's signal interfered with certain American and Canadian stations. According to Gerald Carsons, listeners tuned in Brinkley instead of their favorite program.
At 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, when all America either ate early or ate later, it was out there their radio to hear Amos and Andy on WGN in Chicago. Brinkley was right up there snuggling up between WJR at Detroit and WGN, and sometimes interfering and buzzing because he wandered, and he had all of this power, and that's one reason that he was considered to be a kind of outlaw. They called XCR at XCRA bootleg stations.
When it's round of time in Texas and the boom is on the stage.
The Mexican government more or less condoned Brinkley's escapades, presumably because years before, the United States and Canada had divided up the AM broadcast band, allocating 32 clear channel frequencies to themselves, leaving only 5 to Mexico and Cuba.
And howdy do, friends and neighbors.
This was the era where people were really figuring out that radio and the broadcasting media was a one-on-one media. This was the era where FDR figured out about the fireside chats.
But, says Crawford, border radio circumvented government or corporate control over the media.
It was programming that spoke directly to the farmer in the Dust Bowl, to the small-town merchant in Minneapolis. It was programming that went direct to the heart of the American people, and it sounded a whole lot more interesting to them than what they could get from the regular radio stations.
Brinkley had struck upon the mainstays of border radio programming: health, sex, music, and religion.
There was a lonesome cowboy. There was a fiddler called the Champion Fiddler of Arkansas. He came with him. There was a woman that pitched perfume, and there was a yogi, and they were really weird people.
You had fortune tellers like Rose Dawn that said, "Send me your handkerchief." She dressed in pink. She was pink all over. She had a pink house.
She had a pink Cadillac with her name on it. It was a veritable carnival down on the Rio Grande with J.R. Brinkley as the ringmaster. Preaching became a staple, and radio stations got a cut of the preacher's profit.
Meet me on my knees, on your knees, Friday night at 7:30. And listen now, my friends, the prayer tower is open. The prayer tower is open right now. You that need prayer, my God, the prayer team are sitting by the telephones right now to pray.
In the early 30s, most religious broadcasting was banned by the national radio networks, and asking for money was strictly forbidden. But not on border radio. Preachers pulled in ears, and that boosted sales of all kinds of products, like baby chicks.
But right now, friends, the famous Allied Hatchery is offering you listeners 100 of the regular $5.95 baby chicks for only $4.95 per 100 if you get your order in right away.
Dallas Turner was a border radio personality for over 40 years as a yodeler, a singing cowboy, a mentalist, and a pitchman.
Boy, we sold everything that you can think of, you know. I sold false teeth by mail, aphrodisiacs, erection enhancers, feminine hygiene equipment, with the free enema attachments because you ordered before midnight tomorrow night, lonely hearts clubs, hemorrhoid medicine, erectile itch formula, and believe it or not...
In this age of atomic weapons, worry, and stress, scientific research has produced a substance to help calm and soothe worried and nervous people. Such a substance is in the sleep aid Restall.
The FCC issued regulations designed to put Brinkley out of business. They declared that radio programming must be in the public interest. But XER was licensed to Mexico and out of U.S. control. In 1933, Mexico imposed a few regulations of its own. More Spanish programming, they decreed. Their demands were ignored, and the federales closed XER. The following year ushered in a new administration, and this gave Brinkley the opportunity to rebound back to the airwaves with station XERA.
And then he built something called a directional tower south of XERA, which directed the juice up this way, and they say that it sometimes reached 1,000,000 watts. And it was then definitely the most powerful radio station in, I guess, the world.
This brings us up to the time for the old-fashioned hymn. Well, we've chosen one this morning that we know you're going to like because we like it just an awful lot. The title of it is Turn Your Radio On. And, Jim, if you're ready, why, we'll lead right out.
Come and listen in to a radio station where the mighty host of heaven sings.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on.
In the 30s, radio is your only contact to the outside world. And it was just a fabulous experience for me because I was one of those people that loved to listen and hear everything. And I had music on all day long.
Listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on, turn your radio on. Heaven's glory share, heaven's glory share.
Brinkley helped the pitching go down easier with some of the most influential performers ever in country music. Jimmy Rogers, Bill Monroe, and Woody Guthrie all did stints on Border Radio. And the first family of country music, the Carter family, spent winters at Brinkley Station. This is where Johnny Cash first heard his future wife, June Carter, while listening to the radio in Arkansas.
Now the Carter family wants to know when you're coming down to Monterey, and the custom authorities will do everything possible to cut all the red tape, make it easy for you to get across the border.
Like a magnet, Border Radio drew money, followed by a steady stream of performers, outcasts, entrepreneurs, and fugitives. Norman Baker was a faux doctor claiming to cure cancer with his laying on of hands. Baker also broadcasted medical hokum and anti-conglomeration screeds from his high-wattage station KTNT Know the Naked Truth in Muscatine, Iowa. Following run-ins with medical and radio regulators, Baker, like Brinkley, decamped to the border and built himself a blaster station.
He dressed all in purple, and one way he got inspired in the broadcasting booth was to put a bed in there, and he would lie down in the bed with his paramour, Madame Tangley, and make love while speaking over the radio about the evils of the radio networks. It puts all the shock jocks right in their place. Pikers, mere pikers.
Like other dishonored entrepreneurs before and since, both Brinkley and Baker had run for office. Both lost before heading to the border. But in the 1930s, one business-minded broadcaster finally won. W. Lee Pappy passed the biscuits O'Daniels, depicted in the film A Brother Where Art Thou.
We ain't one at a time in here. We're mass communicating.
Oh, yeah.
The real O'Daniels sold flour in Texas, where he reluctantly agreed to sponsor a country music group on the radio.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful Texas, where the beautiful bluebonnets roll.
The group, including future country star Bob Wills, was a hit, and O'Daniels grabbed the mic to plug his flower. He never let go, riding his folksy flower-pitching popularity to two terms as Texas governor. Governor O'Daniels had electrical transcriptions made of his addresses and flower ads made in the State House for broadcast from a border blaster he co-owned in Mexico. In 1941, O'Daniels ran for Senate in a race that included two other border radio moguls and a congressman, Lyndon Baines Johnson. Pappy won again, dealing LBJ his only electoral loss.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen, and hello there, boys and girls. This is your United States Senator, W. Lee O'Daniel of Texas, speaking to you from your nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and sending you...
By the 1950s, border radio was struggling with competition from television, with legal troubles. When Brinkley finally lost a station during World War II, it was amidst rumors that it had been infiltrated by Axis powers broadcasting propaganda. But just as it was faltering, it was resurrected by an unlikely Brooklyn boy named Bob Smith.
And for those of you who want to dig on the Wolfman tomorrow night, I'll be back here, same stand, man, right here on the big XCRB.
Smith had run away from home to be a DJ, and he eventually made his way to the border stations he'd heard as a kid.
Hey, hey, everybody with the fine old foxes. Hey, everybody with the fine old foxes.
The Wolfman played rhythm and blues, so-called race music, exotic for a lot of white listeners. and he sounded like rock and roll. Arriving on the dial starting at midnight, his howl sounded like nothing else.
You definitely gonna find the action over there, because you're gonna be able to dance, rock and roll, carry on, and also find yourself somebody who is deeply in love with you, man.
People didn't know whether he was black, he was white, he was Mexican, or that he was Martian. It was just a continuous weird blast, and it was wild. It was fascinating.
Among the fascinated, a young George Lucas. His film American Graffiti would be about the influence of the Wolfman on a generation of California teenagers.
I just loved listening to Wolfman. My mom won't let me at home because he's a Negro. I think he's terrific. Do you know that he just broadcasts from a plane that flies around in circles?
The Wolfman sold record collections, he sold roach clips for catching little baby roaches, pills and patent medicines, and yes, baby chicks.
Imagine all the fun you're going to have with these little babies. You just lead them around on little leashes, you give them little names, and then, of course, as they grow up and comes wintertime, you cook them and eat them. It's going to be just fun for you.
The Wolfman eventually wound up in Hollywood, and though Border Radio saw a new crop of preachers and pitchmen, the writing was on the wall. Its broadcasts in English were over by the 1980s. Bill Crawford says that whenever he hears someone condemning the so-called media elites, whenever he listens to pop music, whenever he gets Viagra spam mail, when he hears morning zoo DJs during drive time, he hears the echoes of Border Radio.
Border Radio pioneered popularizing American popular music, country music, rock and roll, hillbilly, gospel music. Border Radio gave a place where your outspoken men of vision, both religious and political, had a place to let their vision be heard before it was allowed on the regular media.
For over 50 years, Border Radio was the embodiment of Mexican anger at its neighbors to the north. But it paid off. Mexico finally got what it wanted, the right to broadcast to itself. Most of the former Border Blaster transmitters are now Mexican, broadcasting for Mexicans. They no longer need to punish the U.S. with the likes of Dr. Brinkley, Norman Baker, and Wolfman Jack. But Bill Crawford says that doesn't mean we've seen the last of the renegades.
All of these things come back again and resurface. They resurface in the internet. And they continue resurfacing whenever new forms of communication, whenever new media are pioneered and allowed to run free.
Border radio was a legal loophole, a fluke. And yet somewhere, the next loophole is opening up, and the entrepreneurs, entertainers, and outlaws are waiting to walk right through.
Well, friends and neighbors, our time's all slipped away from us for this period of broadcast, but time will roll right on around, and we'll be back again almost before you know it. So won't you be waiting for us when we return? And until then, this is Cowboy Slim Reinhart speaking from the studios of XCG, and I'm also speaking for America's number one singing cowgirl, Patsy Montana. We're saying so long, everybody. Good luck to you, and above all, friends, we do wish you good health.
Wait for me, Slim.
Okay, Patsy.
I'm back in the saddle,
bird long on cattle, and I'm happy in the saddle again.
My spurs turned all rusty,
still they're always trusty, and I'm happy in the saddle again.
This is All Things Considered.
Border blasters are still around today in much more limited form, usually not megapower stations designed to irradiate a neighboring country, but lower power AMs, even FM stations, clearly meant to cross borders. You find forms of border blasters around the world today, but none had the cachet and romance of those multi-hundred-thousand-watt AM giants that swept into the American Southwest until banned by international treaty. It's a part of radio history, and we hope you enjoyed it. Mark Dernberger for the DX Audio Service, thank you for joining us. We'll see you in about 30 days. Until then, good listening, DXers.
Thanks, Mark. And now some news and opinion. Back in 2009, June of 2009 to be precise, we had the analog shutdown of television stations. This was when all the stations moved to digital broadcasting. Along that time, we also lost channels 52 to 69. These channels were taken away from broadcasters essentially so Homeland Security could have more frequencies to use in times of emergency. However, not so fast. Something has happened there. It seems that Homeland Security has not picked up those frequencies, and the band has essentially been resold to private individuals, wireless companies, who are using it to distribute the internet and other services to mobile devices and even cars. I mean, after all, you have to watch YouTube as you're driving your car down the freeway, don't you? Now the Federal Communications Commission wants to pack it even denser by taking away channels 31 to 51 and giving those to the wireless folks, as well as repacking all the stations that were in those frequencies down into lower frequencies, channels 14 to 30, as well as high band and low band VHF. Low band VHF is not a good idea. In fact, low-band digital broadcasting does not work hardly at all. You have to be either high-band or channels 14 to 30. And it doesn't take a mathematician to figure out that you just can't put 10 pounds of manure in a 5-pound bag. Well, some people are starting to call manure. And this story came out by the folks at TV News Check, written by Phil Kurtz. It's titled, Study Puts the Squeeze on Spectrum Crunch Claims. How reliable is the data backing up the assertion that wireless network operators face a looming spectrum crunch? Given the magnitude of the changes, that idea ultimately will have on television industry and millions of over-the-air television viewers, it would seem that the data would have been thoroughly vetted. But a new research paper written by J. Armin Mussey, managing director of Golden Associates, and Alec Mehta, a doctoral candidate at the University of Southern California, finds that estimates of future demands for wireless spectrum used by the Federal Communications Commission and other government agencies have been clearly overstated, but remain the basis for a policy direction. Mussey will present the research paper, Overestimating Wireless Demand, Policy and Investment Implications of Upward Bias in Mobile Data Forecasts, next month at the 42nd Telecom Policy Research Conference in Washington, D.C. The paper points to the National Broadband Plan's spectrum shortage estimate of 275 megahertz by 2014 and an ITU radio endorsement estimate of a spectrum shortage of 1280 megahertz to 1720 megahertz by 2020 as two examples of overstated demand. The potential for persistent bias in these projections may allow policy errors based on this data to compound over time as opposed to self-correct, the report says. One source the FCC relied on to help advance its broadband plan was Cisco's forecast of mobile traffic in North America. The research paper finds that the last seven Cisco forecasts have made overestimates nearly twice as often as underestimates, and that the magnitude of overestimates is greater than those of underestimates. Given the unreliability of demand projections for wireless spectrum, regulators should focus on spectrum policy decisions that maximize reversibility and/or flexibility, so they can make a timely and proportional adjustment to allocations, the paper recommends. And that article was written by Phil Kurtz of TV News Check.
Radio station for dogs launches. This article comes from the May-June edition of Medium Wave News from the UK and was sent to us by Jim Renfrew. Auckland dogs, alone at home and feeling lonely, will from today be able to tune into a radio station designed for them. A new initiative has brought together researchers and canine behavior consultants to put together 24-hour programming that will be both fun and relaxing for doggy listeners. Broadcasting on 87.7 FM to Central Auckland, K9 FM, K9 plays dog-centric content ranging from relaxing classical music to chat shows that include talkies, fetch in the park, and meditation with vet Joanna, all programmed and made with dogs in mind. Canine behavior consultant Jess Alsop, who helped consult on the station's programming, said dogs would be able to focus on words they recognized and be calmed by the station's music. My job is to make sure it is as dog-friendly as possible, Alsop said. At the moment when dogs listen to a radio, they have to listen to programs targeted at humans. Canine FM featured words like stick, fetch, and walkies, which dogs could pick up on and understand, Alsop said. Also, musically, it was about finding tempos and beats that are known to be calming for dogs. Owners might enjoy the station too, she said. Canine FM is the result of collaboration between the New Zealand Radio Training School, Colenso BBDO, Pedigree, and Mars. The radio station will run 24 hours a day. For the DX Audio Service, and not in the doghouse, I'm Phil Wayne.
International broadcasters reconsider shortwave. This article is by James Careless and appeared in Radio World magazine on August 15, 2014. At the height of the Cold War, the BBC World Service, Radio Canada International, and the Voice of America used high-power multilingual broadcasts on the shortwave radio bands to blast news and information behind the Soviet Union's Iron Curtain. In turn, Radio Moscow, Radio Havana, Cuba, and East Germany's Berlin Radio International pumped their own version of reality to the world via shortwave. Thanks to the nature of shortwave propagation, in which radio waves can bounce around the world by reflecting off the ionosphere, then to the ground, and then to the ionosphere again, these broadcasts got through. Granted, because they were AM signals, their audio was scratchy and sometimes interference-ridden, and even sometimes blocked by government jammer stations operating on the same frequencies. But nevertheless, Eastern Europeans heard at least some of these international broadcasts. In 1989, the Berlin Wall fell, followed by 2 years later of the collapse of the Soviet Union. Soon after, the Internet caught on. Collectively, these forces demotivated governments from maintaining multi-antenna, multi-transmitter shortwave transmitter farms, where power-hungry 50 and 100-kilowatt AM transmitters guzzled electricity like frat boys downing kegs of beer. The result is that the international broadcasters have reduced their shortwave broadcasts in favor of the web, or, in the case of RCI, abandoned shortwave entirely for the web. RCI's massive shortwave antenna and transmitter farm in Sackville, New Brunswick, which provided stellar coverage of Europe during the Cold War, has since been torn down. It's amazing how many of the major shortwave broadcasters have abandoned shortwave, completely or mostly, since the fall of the Berlin Wall, said Jeff White, founder and general manager of Radio Miami International. RMI is a United States-based commercial shortwave broadcaster which covers the Americas, Europe, and Africa via its 13 transmitter, 23 antenna facility located in Florida. Mindful of radio's continuing third-world popularity, the BBC and VOA have at least maintained shortwave transmissions to places like Africa, the Middle East, and parts of Asia and Latin America, White said. But some of them, including the Voice of Russia, have ended all shortwave transmissions. The large religious shortwave broadcasters have more or less followed suit. There is no doubt that money played a big role in the demise of international shortwave broadcasting, especially for cash-strapped governments. Shortwave transmitters are expensive to operate because of the electrical costs, and expensive to replace, said Kim Andrew Elliott, an audience research analyst for the United States International Broadcast Bureau, which runs the VOA, expressing his own views. In contrast, the internet is a cheaper way to transmit globally, unless the audience gets real big. The signal is more reliable, and stations don't interfere with one another, he said. The web has also caught on with government broadcasters because it's considered cool. The World Wide Web is a sexy technology, said White. So the station managers have been able to say to their bosses and governments that they have saved a lot of money by eliminating the old technology of shortwave and replacing it with a new technology of the internet. As well, broadcasters like the BBC World Service have moved to FM, where it's possible to deliver better audio quality and signal reliability. For many years, the BBC World Service has been trying to broadcast its services through its own FM relay transmitters and providing programs to affiliates, says Nigel Fry, head of the distribution arm of the BBC World Service Group. The oldest FMs have been in service for over 40 years, with many more coming into service from 20 years ago to the present day as markets liberalize and licenses are secured. In swapping shortwave for the web, these broadcasters have put their program delivery at the mercy of hostile governments who can block their web-based content just by disrupting their country's internet traffic. That happened recently in China, as authorities tried to prevent the people from learning what actually happened 25 years ago in Tiananmen Square. In an effort to prevent the dissemination of information related to this event, the Chinese censorship authorities have severely blocked most of Google services in China, including search and Gmail, said the China web traffic watchdog GreatFire.org in a June 2nd email to Bloomberg News. Our gut feeling is this disruption may be permanent. It is relatively simple for authoritarian regimes to block websites that they don't like. But in fairness, shortwave radio broadcasts can also be blocked by jamming stations. Some BBC World Service internet services are blocked in specific countries, most notably in China, says Fry. The English shortwave broadcast to China and the surrounding countries are also being jammed by the Chinese, and have been for some time. Our Uzbek broadcasts are also jammed. There are ways that web-based services can get past governments blocking through software programs, at least as long as some internet traffic is getting through. For instance, some international broadcasters are employing technologies such as Siphon that circumvent the blocking of internet content, says Elliott. The circumvention technologies are not infallible. However, they may fall into the face of a more rigorous interdiction. They certainly will not work if a country physically cuts off the internet lines, bringing in foreign traffic, or slows them down to debilitating speeds. To meet this challenge, VOA has an experimental program underway called VOA Radiogram. In this program, the station broadcasts both text and photographic information via shortwave to listeners equipped with radio-connected computers. VOA Radiogram is an experiment to provide information to any place where the internet, or at least content from abroad, is unavailable due to dictators, disasters, conflict, or remote locations, says Elliott, who is leading the effort. He said that the experiment has been very successful. We tried various modes, including PSK, MT63, and Oliva, but MFSK, Multiple Frequency Shift Keying, has been the best performer. MFSK32 at 120 words per minute provides a good compromise between speed and accuracy under challenging shortwave reception conditions. Clearly, progress has been made in getting web-based content into repressive countries. Nevertheless, White sees shortwave radio as the delivery medium of choice for people living under authoritarian regimes, based on his own experience. For our audience in Cuba, for example, shortwave is the only way to get through, he said. our RMI listeners in Cuba, WRMI broadcasts in English and Spanish, write us and tell us this constantly. They beg us not to eliminate shortwave like so many of their other favorite radio stations have done in recent years. In recent years, an increasing number of these Cuban listener pleas have come to WRMI by email. But as for listening to our web stream simulcast, asked White, so far, we have not received even one letter or email from a listener in Cuba who says they can listen to us via the web. That article was by James Careless, and he reports on the industry for Radio World magazine from his home in Ottawa, Ontario. And this article came from Radio World magazine.
You can read about it tomorrow, or possibly see it tonight, but with radio,